Hey, welcome to Breitbart News Daily. Thanks for being here. We talked with a guest at 7 o'clock about the middle class and the working class. And got at the end of the conversation to a point, to this point about 7 million able-bodied men who are just not working. I'm like, oh, why is that? What's happening here? What amount of it is people's lack of work ethic? And what amount of this is the fault of the elites who brought in this slave class of labor and projected this message of this job is beneath you? So we kind of talked about that. And then we got this call from Angel. And that's where we want to start things, because this obviously unveiled, opened up a whole can here that I had no idea was so prevalent and clearly has dramatic influences on not only the economy, just people's lives and livelihoods and dreams. So I've never broached this topic before. You can probably tell my uncomfortability throughout this segment, but I still think it's important to start talking more about. So here it is. In Florida. Angel, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
One of the things that's been a major issue in our world is the deterioration of family, as we've all talked about. And one of the reasons men don't want to work, I have four brothers and four sisters, men don't want to work anymore because they got someone pregnant and that someone is taking their paycheck to use and however they choose. To raise the child that the father, my brother, never ever met or saw.
Jeez, I wonder how prevalent that is these days. Gosh, I wonder if there's any numbers on that. That is interesting. So your brother got a woman pregnant. Does he have any connection to this kid at all, or did the mom split?
Zero.
Okay.
Zero. How much, never ever met them.
Wow. How much does your brother want to have a connection?
Pardon me?
How much did your brother want to be in the child's life?
A lot. So much that he drank himself to death and never met the 21-year-old twins.
I'm sorry about that, Angel.
Because he went to work and she got his paycheck. And she said when they found out it was twins, you will never, ever know or meet these children.
How much
and then
money?
He sued for child support.
How much money was he given her? And then
she took money that he opened a bank account, getting his life together, blah, 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 because he was so distraught. She took everything he put in the bank account, which was over $16,000, which isn't a lot of money to raise two children. I get it. But he never, ever met them. They're 21 years old. And he's dead.
Angel, it's go ahead, give your final thought. I have a lot to say, but do you have a final thought on all that?
It's just part of the system. There's a whole bunch of deadbeat dads, quote, out there that are tired of paying into the system when they have no say or no ability to raise what they brought onto this earth.
Yeah. How much, and this is such a difficult question,
of family.
How much do you blame your brother for all this?
He's got his fair share, of course. He should have fought harder. He should have tried longer. He shouldn't have given up. But the system was definitely against him.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
and they
right.
were born in Delaware, and she lied and said they were conceived in Florida, so she went to court in Florida because Florida was more strict with the deadbeat dad situation. Yeah.
Angel, I appreciate the call, and I appreciate you bringing that up. I wonder how prevalent that is, and how I'm guessing very. And I don't know if there's any numbers to prove that. There's got to be numbers somewhere to prove that. But that has to be a factor in things. Angel, I really appreciate you bringing that up. Now, I was just talking to a guy the other day with it. That's his situation. Listen, I want to go back and listen to Batya talk about the sexual aspects of our economy. One of the reasons we need to tell young people and not so young people to keep it in their pants is this may happen to you. If you need any more reason to just not do it, let me tell you a story. And you tell Angel tells her story. That's a good birth control. It was we were taking some class in college. I forget what class it was, and it was the class before spring break. The professor put up on the screen a bunch of slides of sexually transmitted disease. It's like, here's chlamydia. Everyone, I'm not kidding. Here's chlamydia. Here's what gonorrhea looks like. Everyone, have a great spring break. And I feel like we need to do that to 20-year-olds. Maybe that needs to be like a prereq before you go into the club. It's like, hey, everyone. Hey, young man. Here is your bank account. And here's what it looks like paying child support for the next 20 or 18 years. Have a good time. Enjoy your night and watch the libidos go boom. But I think we need to chat like that because that's real. And that's why I something that needs to be factored into this. There's two groups. There really is. And I don't know how, maybe there's more. But there's the people who are doing their darndest to doing their best. And maybe there's a huge overlap here, too. But then there's people who make really bad life decisions. That's one of them. This is a bad decision. And it's not like there's no wisdom out there telling you not, right? It's not like, no, who is like, shouldn't have had unprotected sex with this total stranger. And, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Like, this has been known for a long time. So how much of a factor of our economy today is just bad decisions? I'll give you another example. There's a TikTok going around. I think I have it here. Hey, okay. There's a swear word at a point in this, but I think I know where it is. It's kind of at the end of it. So this is a TikTok. How many views? 13 million views. Okay. This just, yeah. All right. Check this woman out. All right, here we go.
Worse than my Tahoe payment. You guys thought that was bad. Wait till you hear this one. It's my husband's truck. My husband drives a 2020 GMC AT4 Sierra 1500.
Okay, I'll just cut ahead because she's annoying. She has a Tahoe. Her payment on her Tahoe is $1,400. And here she is mocking her husband, whose truck is $1,600 a month. $1,600. They pay $3,000 a month just on two cars. That is a really, really bad idea. That's a really, I recently bought, so we had a Jeep. We had a 2007 Jeep Grand Cherokee. We drove it into the ground, stopped working. It didn't work anymore. The engine blew up. It stopped working. So we're like, I need a truck. So remember I brought up on the radio, I was like, I need a truck that, I think my qualifications were like, I want it at like 80,000 miles and I want it to go to 200,000 miles. And 10 out of 10 emails I got, people said, oh, you got to get a Toyota. So I went to the Toyota dealer. We bought a used Toyota Tundra. We splurged. And the car payment's $700 a month. I think that's crazy. I'm appalled at $700. I'm embarrassed to admit that we're spending $700 a month on a car. And you feel free to send me all the Dave Ramsey videos you want. I understand how horrible of an idea that is. But I decided to splurge. $700 a month. These people are spending $3,000 on two depreciating assets. And I think that's a little bit. So like, that's a bad decision. That's a bad decision. And they may complain about how they can't get ahead in today's society. It's like, oh, geez. Like, what do you want me to do with that? And I think that's kind of what I mean by materialism as well. Like, oh, I need more. I need the newest truck. Well, geez, no, you don't. You really don't. You don't need a $600 a month truck. So how much of this is bad decisions? Individual people's bad decisions. And that goes back to the hillbilly elegy where the guy's like, I don't want to wake up early in the morning. You're like, what do you mean? The Obama economy. It's like, oh, like, come on, man. Like, so what is that? What are the groups? What percentage of what? I don't know. I don't know if we can even figure that one out. Will is in Kentucky. What's going on, Will? How are you?
Fine, how are you?
Good, brother. What do you make of Angel's brother's situation?
Well, I kind of lived it. point in my life back in the late 90s. I was making $600 a week, $15 an hour, and the judge gives me a $250 a month child support payment. And on $600 a week, half my check's already gone before taxes. It's hard for a man to fight for their kids, and the system is there to break up the family.
Yeah.
She did a good job with mine, and she got rewarded for every time the orders were broke. She would get rewarded.
And by the system, do you mean the divorce system where the kids almost automatically go to the mom?
Yes.
Yeah.
And she couldn't hold a job. We're not going there for the contest, but yeah, they set it up to where they kneecap the man and keep them in debt to where they're only living on $10 a week. And how can you get to work on $10 after you pay your rent, you this, you that? Yeah. And you got $10 to make it to work the rest of the week.
So Boccia
was $3 a gallon back then.
Yeah. And Boccia, and our last person's point, was that men, therefore, will almost rationally conclude and almost not work at all. Because what's the point anyway?
Well, I stayed broke, but I knew what I was doing it for. And it was the hardest 20 years of my life, and I'm still fighting with it because of arrears that don't exist.
Okay, I'm gonna ask you a tough question, Will. How much of this blame do you put on you?
Oh, well, I met the wrong woman. I guess it was all my fault.
Will, I appreciate the call. Listen, I was just talking about this with my wife. Something happened. I forget where this came up. The single most important decision you make in your life is who you marry. And I don't think we put nearly enough of an emphasis on that in our society. Like back in the, I think we look back in the day and we mock the, maybe the arranged marriages, but even the idea that parents have more of a say than perhaps even the children have in who they marry. Right? I think we look back in that, we're like, oh, that's so backwards, that's so medieval or whatever. You're like, no, there was a reason for that. It's because adults know, you have lived it, and Will has a pretty good insight in who not to marry, what type of person to not marry, and they've learned from it, and they're like, oh, that person, son, you shouldn't marry that type of person. You should marry this type of person. Instead, like, there was some reason why parents had more of a say in setting up their children for marriage than we just let the passions of youth take over into it. Like there's something there. We need to get back to a society where the most important, like, are you sure, son? Are you sure? What's the good book say about it's better to live on a roof. Better to live on a roof than a what? Than a quarrelsome wife. Better to live on the corner of a roof than share a house with a quarrelsome wife. And women, there's wisdom here as well on marrying the right man. I feel like we have just thrown that away for, I don't know, whoever you have a passionate lust for in the moment. And you're like, that's, we got to do better than that, people. Hey, welcome back to Breitbart News Daily. The great Alex Marlowe, as you will find out here, quite a claim to fame that I've never known before of this great man. Add to the list of illustrious accolades, the great Alex Marlowe. Alex, how are you, sir?
Hi, Mike. I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on your broadcast.
I feel like it's been too long, our broadcast, too long since we've chatted. How is the little one?
Oh, there's so many of them. No, they're all good. Thank you. Thank you for asking.
Good.
We will see if she wakes up for a bottle during the interview, which is quite possible, but no, very good.
I love that.
Yes.
I got to see Alex Marlowe the other day, the great John Kahn perform live. Have you ever had the pleasure of this?
I have. He's really terrific. He's got so much soul.
Have you? Has he told you the idea that he has?
He's got a lot of ideas. I mean, in fact, I have a couple of meetings with him every week where he shares with me his ideas and how he wants to do a special with country stars.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think?
I love it. Of course, I love it.
Okay. Of course, I love it. All right. Well, we're thinking next week we'll make that happen. Yeah. So I'm excited.
No, I think that this is one of the things I think that the audience can look forward to more in the coming years, is that I think we want to do more of these longer form things with a video element as well as an audio element, so that we can share it with multiple audiences. Yeah, I think that's something we talked about quite a bit, and I do think that that's, I think I'm spilling the beans and I'm saying that that's our intention for the next few years of Breitbart, to make that a priority.
Very cool. All right, well, next Wednesday will be one step forward in that effort. Let's chat about the put a little bow on, although this will not be the end of this, I'm sure, but the trans madness from this last Easter weekend. What's your conclusion of all that?
I think that it's really potentially a major mistake for Biden on an issue where he probably, despite how offensive all of the trans stuff is to conservative audiences, I feel like it doesn't necessarily move the needle for a lot of just normal people, a lot of Gen Z people. I think a lot of people still see the group of trans Americans as a small group of people and are generally live very challenging lives anyway. And they don't love the general take on, for example, right wing Twitter, where there's a lot of anger and animosity towards this group of people. And I think that a lot of people who are more casual political observers do not see this issue the same way that the people in this audience do. I have to say, though, when you start doing stuff like putting Trans Day of Visibility on the most holy day of the year, and then you start banning religious symbols from the festivities at the White House for that most holy day of the year, and you've got a president who talks about being a Catholic all the time, and it talks about how his faith informs his opinions, all of a sudden people start thinking, wait a minute, there's something up, there's something going on. And then he comes out and he kind of let the cat out of the bag yesterday by saying that, or the White House did, that they're now denying that they made Easter Sunday Transgender Day of Visibility and calling it misinformation. And now people know that that's not true. They know that it's, that did happen. So this feels like something that could be a major narrative. It could be something that you hear talked about at the RNC. And I think that one thing, being a Biden expert as I am at this point, one thing that I think that is really important is that he's hoodwinked people into thinking that he's compassionate, that he's really a good guy. Joe Biden is a terrible guy, and he's one of the worst people I've ever come across in politics. And people don't understand this. And this is the type of stuff I do think wakes people up to, oh, wait a minute, maybe he's not that nice of a guy. Maybe he's not that compassionate, because he's not compassionate to Catholics. He's not compassionate to Christians.
What's not nice about this? Because obviously the idea is he's tolerant and loving towards the trans.
Yeah, but he's not tolerant and loving towards the Christians. And I think that that's, I think, what people start considering. But I'll tell you, the story that blew me away yesterday is, it was actually from Sunday, but I didn't notice it until yesterday, is the D.C. Cardinal Wilton Gregory, who I used to go and sit in the pews when he would preach. Because when I lived in D.C., when he became cardinal of the area, and there's, I think, 15 cardinals in the country, then you are essentially function as the pastor of the Cathedral of St. Matthew the Apostle in the West End of D.C., which is where I would go to church. And so I would sit in the pews, and he's a incredible orator. He's not a right winger. He was anti-Trump. He's a left-wing guy. And now he's one of the 15 most powerful Catholics in the country. And he came out and he said Joe Biden is a cafeteria Catholic. He says he picks and chooses elements of his faith. He ignores and contradicts himself. And he shies away from the challenging elements of faith. And he only embraces the stuff that he, quote, uses the current situation as a political pawn. So when you've got left-wing, inner-city Catholics coming at Joe Biden's Catholic faith, something is clearly eroded in terms of people's trust in this guy. And that, to me, is a awesome, awesome development.
Yeah, I like that. On the religious part, you would think to, because I always like breaking things down, and you did this a moment ago, between us and your average person who's not listening to SiriusXM Patriot at 7:10 Central Time, right? And there's two different conversations that always need to be having, almost two different analyses of anything. You would think that the hypocrisy, at the very least, of this cafeteria Catholicism would make an impact outside of our bubble. And I think it does. But then you have someone like a Mike Johnson, the speaker, who lives his faith truly, deeply, profoundly, and he only gets criticized for it. So yeah. I don't know what to do with that exactly.
Yeah, well, I think that there's I think there's an element of insincerity about Joe Biden that people have missed. And I think that there's anyone who's a sincere a follower of a specific theology is inevitably going to run into contradictions. There's weak points with every faith and strength with every faith as well. So it's not a clean process. It's not an easy process to embrace a certain theology. So I think that if you're a conservative, then people are very quick to point out where you're hypocritical, where you might overdo it, where you might underdo it. That's very common to talk about that in public life. But when you're a liberal Democrat like Joe Biden, then it's not discussed. And I think that now the fact that it is being discussed sends a signal to me that his coalitions are eroding. That is something that Joe Biden's cornerstone of his success has been. He's been able to motivate these blocks of people throughout his life. And that's why he panders to the blue collar guys, because he knows he needs those people. It's why he doesn't touch inner city crime, because he knows he needs inner city people. That's why he's a big government guy, because he needs the green people. And the people who are sort of single issue type people, the abortion crowd, which comes up here. And Gregory talked about this specifically, about how it's obviously not a Catholic abortion position, which is his position is abortion is okay until apparently a few days after the baby's born. And if I'm being incorrect, please go and fact check me on it, because what is the position then of the standard Democrat, standard bearer right now in politics? It's got to be up at least until the day of birth, right? So obviously Catholics don't agree with that. And then so how does he deal with it? He just doesn't deal with it, and the media allows for that. Will they allow for that for the rest of the year? Maybe. I don't know.
You mentioned base eroding. So just the other day, he made the claim that the Democratic Party is more united than ever, and his proof was the big fundraiser they had in New York City on Friday. Now, of course, Breitbart highlighted the fact that Donald Trump went to the wake of the New York City police officer who was shot guy by, who's been arrested 21 times already. And at the same time, Biden was at this big fundraiser at Radio City Music Hall hosted by Stephen Colbert with Clinton, Obama, and himself, the Three Stooges, as Trump called them. And it was Bill Kristol who said this: the optics of this look are really bad, obviously, politically for the Democrats. But David Axelrod came back and said, yes, it looks bad, but $26 million is worth it. And the people will forget about the bad optics from last Friday, and the $26 million will go a long way. What are we to do with this fundraiser that happened on Friday? What do you make of it?
Yeah, always smart to cite Axelrod, because he's the Democrat who's the most credible on the stuff. His analysis is generally the most accurate of any Democrat analyst. So I think that's a good call. And I do tend to agree with him. I do think people will probably forget about this. But it was another bad day for Biden, though. I mean, it looked terrible. Trump looked great. And I do think it just reminds a few more people who really is the compassionate one and the one who has any connection to normal American people. Bizarrely, it's the blue-collar billionaire and not the guy who claims to represent Pennsylvania and Delaware and, you know, middle America. Biden has no connection to America. He's been a politician for 50 years. He doesn't get it. He doesn't get what's important to people. Mm-hmm. And he was not going to miss the opportunity to do this historic fundraiser. But I think that the point that the Democrats are united, as evidenced by that fundraiser, does ring true to me, because those are huge hauls. And I document a lot of prior Hollywood fundraising in Breaking Biden. Obviously, it came out before this past weekend. But I make this point a lot, is that Hollywood being willing to empty their pockets for this thousand-year-old man who has no connection to them whatsoever, other than that Joe Biden is responsible more than any human being on the planet for selling out Hollywood to China, which is maybe my favorite chapter of the book. Yep. He hurt China in a major way. I'm sorry, he hurt Hollywood in a major way, and they still do this. It does show you that they're dead serious about getting him reelected. And that is something that is going to be news to a lot of conservatives, that they're that serious about getting him back in the White House.
Yes. Yeah, so we spent the last hour talking about how the elites have sold out the middle class or the working class what's the name of the book? Here it is. Second Class, How the Elites Betrayed America's Working Men and Women by Batya Ungar Sargon. So we talked to her about that. Equally, Biden has sold out Hollywood to China, but they don't seem to care. So, and what's going on there? Well, how do they not see that connection? They hate Trump that much.
Yeah, well, also the executives in Hollywood are responsible for it. I mean, everyone was in on it. It's the Jeffrey Katzenberg is the other person who's most responsible. But to sum up the chapter, and definitely I hope everyone picks it up and reads it, but to sum it up in a nutshell, Joe Biden and Xi Jinping, when they were their respective number twos in their country, they forged a deal that would open up the Chinese market to American films. However, there are so many conditions that were put in place on what American movies would make it in, and the Chinese censors move at their own paces. So they don't move on a DreamWorks' schedule or Miramax's schedule or Universal Pictures' schedule. They move when they want. So what ended up happening is we ended up self-censoring, and we ended up changing all of our art in anticipation of trying to get it into China. And then even though the quota was much higher of how many American movies could make it in, China ended up admitting fewer and fewer American movies, coming up with excuses after excuses. And so we ended up censoring all of our art, neutering it, cutting out so much fun stuff that what made American movies special. And we ended up doing worse at the Chinese box office than we did originally. And this was a big bait and switch. Xi Jinping did it, and Biden was the patsy because Biden cut all the deals. And the other patsy was Jeffrey Katzenberg, who is one of the main bundlers for Joe Biden, as he was for Barack Obama, and maybe more than any other person got Barack Obama nominated over Hillary Clinton, if you want to go that far back. So this is all completely unknown to the public. Almost no one knows that Joe Biden did this, that he's responsible for the destruction of Hollywood more than any other individual. And he's gotten a total pass on it, evidenced by what happened this weekend.
Yeah. I thought of this, your chapter the other day, because when you read this chapter in Breaking Biden, it's obvious that one day, very soon, we will be watching Chinese movies with English subtitles. That's the direction we're heading in. And it's like, oh, will the American people put up with that? And then I saw this last weekend, this artificial intelligence example where they take a movie with English subtitles and they AI the mouth of the person to put in a different language. So you can't even tell that it has what's the word? Dubbed. You can't tell that it's dubbed into a different language. So it could be Chinese people and they just dub in AI English and you don't even know. So anyway, I just thought of that. That's what is happening.
Yeah, and that's certainly going to happen. But I think even scarier, in my opinion, than us watching Chinese movies is how China has been willing to watch what I believe, or I haven't watched a lot of Chinese movies, but they seem to be inferior, even though they've improved since America taught them how to make movies over the last decade and a half, which is another part of the Joe Biden deal. But America, we would export our culture via the silver screen. And now what are we exporting? We're exporting this generic corporate wokeness that no one really likes and no one is going to watch. And they're not going to watch it in China because the movies aren't as good. So they're actually watching their own movies even over the American movies that are available to them in many cases, because the American movies are just not that good. So it's just such a failure. And Joe Biden has just gotten, of all the things he's gotten a pass for, this one is one of the more frustrating for me.
Yeah, Breaking Biden, one of the chapters in Breaking Biden. You mentioned a moment ago about the base and the importance of the base. And I want to get your insight on this because I don't think politically I need to learn in this regard. Because we were questioning Biden's electric vehicle mandates that he put out like a week or so ago. And my first thought is, oh, that's such a horrible idea if you want to win the state of Michigan, and you need to win the state of Michigan. So what are you doing putting out electric vehicle mandates now? Before, it doesn't make any sense. And Nolte was like, oh, it's for the base. And it's like, wow, what a political calculation that you would do something that's so obviously bad for the people of Michigan just because it's good for the base. So can you speak to that, like how important the base is in an election?
And I'm so glad you got to talk to Nolte about this, because he is the expert on this, because he's the one who points out how often Democrats vote against their own personal interest. And this is going to be one of the major stories of this election, because I do think that when it comes to the people with children of a certain age, you have to deal with the trans stuff every day. People live in cities, you have to deal with all the crime and the homelessness. Anyone who goes to a grocery store or uses a gas station, so has to deal with the Bidenflation. Are people going to continue to vote against their own interest the way that I'm a California resident, the way I've been witnessing for years? It's the illegal immigration has been a massive problem for decades, and yet we vote for the party that wants an open border every time. Why do we do that? That is a complex question, and you probably need some expert psychotherapist to help me answer it. But will Michiganders do that? Will they vote directly against their own interests because Joe Biden's values, which are the green stuff, it lines up with their values? On a personal level, this is devastating to their state economy, because the combustion engine has driven the state economy in Michigan, and Biden wants it basically eliminated. So will they do it or not? I don't know. I think there's a chance they will. But Michigan is going to be clearly one of the most interesting states, because I know, Mike, we've mentioned this on the show together, about how Biden is really hurting with Muslim voters because he's not seen as sufficiently anti-Israel. So he's got that problem as well. So Michigan is a number one most interesting state right now for those reasons.
Well, we talked to the Senate candidate there, Mike Rogers. And then yesterday we talked to the guy who's running for Congress in Lansing.
Tom Barrett.
Yeah. And he said it's the most money of any race in the country, or right up there at the top, the most money. And he could win a city, right? To win Lansing. That's a big deal, and flip that seat. And hopefully there's a nice wave going on there. Well, speaking of Trump, you got to hang out with him again the other day. What was his most recent interview like?
So it was a little more formal. He was doing some back-to-back-to-back interviews. He had to wear a suit and tie. The last time he had to wear his golf clothes. So he was...
Oh, which do you prefer? I think you want golf clothes, Trump, don't you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. If you don't have the cameras rolling, for sure. I mean, he looked sharp in his suit. I mean, he's a... people don't give him credit for that, but it's he's got a look. And no, you want him to casual in golf clothes and without a schedule. But it was terrific. He's a great person to hang out with, even if you don't like his politics. I think people kind of get this, and will begrudgingly admit it, even if they don't love his politics. But yeah, he's always good to spend time with him. He's getting pretty expert at not answering the questions you ask him. But hey, look, he's been a politician now for closing in on a decade, so he's got that down. But I do think he sees the battlefield. He's much more disciplined in what he says than in prior campaigns. I think he knows what are the weak points for Biden and what are the things he needs to talk about. And he's doing a pretty good job of not scandalizing himself relative to what the media is already going to do. So he's got the eye of the tiger. There's no doubt about it. And that's the thing to convey more than anything to people, is he's dead serious about winning this election. And he thinks he's going to do it. I'll tell you that if you ask him right now.
The discipline is maybe everything. To reference Nolte again, he says it's Trump's to lose. And I don't know how confident Nolte is that he won't make major mistakes and lose it. I don't know. But the discipline and staying on topic is the thing. And then you see something like the bloodbath comment. And, you know, people on the left obviously freaking out about the whole bloodbath and like, oh, he said it on purpose. He knows what he's doing. What do you find that to be, lack of discipline, or is that the media just doing the media?
Yeah, I think that was the media doing the media. I think that comment was taken wildly out of context. If you look at the way that bloodbath is anyone who follows markets, follows financial trends, as Trump has done for more of his life than anything else. I mean, that's where he's a business guy. Bloodbath is commonly used when industry gets wiped out. If he had thought about it, I'm sure that it wouldn't. I would be shocked if it crossed his mind that people are going to see this as a call to violence. Now, that said, it probably is smart for the next 6 months or whatever to have a trigger in your brain that if you're going to use something. I do this personally. I mean, I speak enough publicly that I try not to use violent imagery. Even if it's an analogy, because I don't want the headache of media matters give me a hard time. It just is not. I'm not in that place in my life that I want them give me a hard time over stuff I say that's smart, not that I use an analogy I didn't need to use. So I think it's worth him considering that. But I think, again, it just shows you what the media is going to do. It's the, that was a total 100% fake news manipulation, yeah. But hey, they've only done 1,000 of those over the years.
Yeah. And the most heartening thing of it was how quickly we circled the circle of like, oh, that's a lie. Like it used to take like a year before the truth came around, or maybe a week, or maybe a news cycle. And that was instant. Like, oh, they're lying about it. And I think it didn't go far. I think it backfired, if anything.
But that kind of makes raises another interesting question, which is that how much clearly the public faith in the media is lower than it's ever been. The polls, yes, show it. Common sense shows it. But still, how much does the media get through to people? Because, and this is why I wrote Breaking the News, and sorry to keep plugging my stuff, but it is kind of where I have my most concentrated thought. It's not just about left and right. It's about corporate establishment versus not corporate establishment. And that's why all the corporations prop up the establishment media, because they don't want, they want them to have a much bigger market share than shows like this one and websites like Breitbart. And so that way, when all these people who only tune in to figure out their politics weeks or months or whatever before they go to vote, and are tuned in 24/7, 365, where are they going to go to get their news? They're going to go to the usual places because that's what's most in their face. And I think that is something that it has got to be a real fear. And that's why people need to treat it. Don't look at the polls. The polls are incredible. Don't look at those. You've got to treat it as though we're running 5 points behind. And that needs to be the approach for the rest of the year.
That's right. you say rest of the year. I feel like the next landmark is the RNC in Milwaukee, excuse me, July 15th to July 18th. Mm-hmm. I don't know, how many weeks is that? April, May, June. Well, I guess we got a few more months. But this is a phase. This is a phase of the campaign, and then that starts a new phase of the campaign. Where are we in these next few months? What do we do? What should we be thinking about? How should we be talking? What's happening here?
Yeah, it's a great question. For me, it was, you know, when you see weekends like last weekend, which was an Easter weekend, and Biden is just can't stop stepping on rakes. It's like the Sideshow Bob scene in The Simpsons where he steps on like 13 rakes in a row. And if those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, please go to YouTube and treat yourself to that. And it's going into this week. You know, you get these moments where you feel like, how could we possibly just do Trump versus Biden for this long? We already know this is a rerun. This is, you know, daytime syndicated. It's just King of Queens again. You know, it just comes on.
It's
not a bad show, but it's just on. It's just on. Why is it on? Do I even like the show? I think I like it. I don't know. How much can we do that? Maybe quite a bit. Maybe quite a bit. And I honestly think that much of the country does not really understand Joe Biden, and I think much of the country doesn't even think he's going to be the nominee still, even though he clearly is. Just look at that event last weekend. And a lot of people don't know Donald Trump as well as they think they do. And so I'm up for spending more time getting to know them. But in general, is there going to be some level of fatigue relative to past elections? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's here.
Oh, we lost.
I think I'm here.
There you go. I lost it at the oh, yeah. I lost it at the fatigue. Will there be fatigue? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're definitely having some fatigue.
Yeah,
that's going to happen.
But I think on your point, I think it's different enough. I think everyone's different enough. Everything's different. We didn't get a good look at Biden in 2020.
We really didn't.
And Trump is disciplined enough or different enough still, / fun enough, that I could use some more. So I'm here for it, and I think we can make it to the finish line here.
I agree. I maybe even undersold it. I mean, I'm much more excited about this election than 2020. Probably more than any other election other than 2016. I mean, we just can't get spoiled and think that we're ever going to get 2016 again. We're not going to get that. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
That's the most fun we've ever had. I mean, that was, you know, that senior prom, you know, grad night, like whatever it is. Like, this stuff doesn't happen a lot. Like, you get a couple of shots like that, maybe. And
you only get one senior prom.
Even though I went to three, by the way.
Oh, come on. Oh, ladies,
trivia.
Man. The guy can't be stopped. How did this happen?
This is so my when I was a junior in high school, I had a girlfriend who was a senior.
Oh, it's a big deal. To go a junior to go to the senior prom, that's a big deal.
It, it was pretty cool. And I loved, most of my friends were in her class. So then when I was a senior, my girlfriend was a junior.
Okay, so you repaid the favor. Nice.
Yes. And then I had the same girlfriend when I was out of college. So
I went back. What's the cooler move, to be the junior going up or the freshman in college going back down?
Well, I will tell you the true answer, and the one that I will say in case I play this interview for Mrs. Dr. Marlowe later, is any prom with Mrs. Dr. Marlowe is the coolest night of the year. So
it was her.
She was the second too. So
that's great. I was gonna. Yeah. I didn't know that was true, and I thought the answer was gonna be something like, I've never thought of prom in the last 15, 20 years.
I've never been a prom guy. It's so ironic because I'm not a party guy. If I went to zero, if I had no girlfriends, I wouldn't have just gone with like my neighbor or whatever just to go. there's no way I would have done that. And I end up going to three, which I think is just. I've still never met anyone who went to three in my life. So
you're underselling the fact that you won prom king as well. You're leaving that part out.
I did not. That is not true.
Fake news.
Not in my Beverly Hills prep school. They had some real studly characters.
The quarterback one. My senior year English teacher, he did this whole stand-up bit about how prom is the stupidest thing of your life. It's such a waste of money. Don't buy a limo. Don't even go. It's so dumb. And like, he didn't realize that everyone was really excited for it. And afterwards he was like, oh, I should have saved that. Sorry. And obviously looking back, it's like, oh yeah, that was really dumb. Like a huge, like we're way over the top with prom.
No, it's way over the top. It doesn't live up to your expectations. But you know, I do think that in life, you have to push yourself to have these outside of your comfort zone moments and do different things. And so especially when you know something is one night, or in my case, three nights only. I have no problem with it. I have no problem with people going on the top. It's not on a personal level. It's actually because it's not something that would interest me. If someone threw there's a community place that I take my kids and stuff that did like a prom thing recently in my neighborhood. Mike, if you thought I'd be caught dead at that thing, you're completely wrong. But you know, when you're 18, you can do it one time.
That's right. Breaking Biden by three-time prom attendee Alex Marlowe, exposing the hidden forces and secret money machine behind Joe Biden and his family, his administration. You should put that in your Twitter bio. Three-time prom attendee.
It's in my Amazon already. So people can check and verify. It's in my two-time New York Times bestselling author, three times prom attendee.
Oh man, your people move fast. Breaking Biden by the book. Alex Marlowe, editor-in-chief. Thanks, Alex.
That was fun, Mike. Thank you.
Appreciate you, man. Have a great day.
I'm American made. I got American parts.
Donald Trump is in Wisconsin right now. And tomorrow, we're going to talk to the senator of Wisconsin, Ron Johnson, at 8 o'clock.
I won't apologize.